It's one of the most aptly named UFC pay-per-views in a while. UFC 84, Ill Will, and it all goes down this Saturday night from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Of course, that's all we're talking about today on MMA Rated Radio, and we've enlisted the help of MMAmania.com's Jesse Holland to help break it all down with us. What's going on, Jesse?
Not too much. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. Very excited about this one. Probably the most anticipated card of the year, and I'm even talking about a year that has St. Pierre Serra II, Silva Hendo. I mean, it's been a great year thus far in the world of mixed martial arts and specifically the UFC, but this one is top to bottom stacked, to take a line from last year's UFC 73 event, and it all starts at the top with BJ Penn going up against Sean Sherk. Of course, this one is for the UFC lightweight title, the title that Sean Sherk held last year at UFC 73, then he got stripped of it because we all know about the nandrolone issues and all that. Now, BJ Penn, Sean Sherk, the big question is, does Sean have what it takes to sort of out-wrestle, out-muscle BJ Penn, a guy certainly on a roll right now? And then on the other side of things, can BJ Penn sort of stake his claim to that UFC lightweight title and prove that he is the big boy at 155? What do you think about this bout? How do you think it's going to go down?
I think this is a very interesting matchup, and I think the key here for both fighters is, what does BJ Penn have to offer as far as cardio is concerned? We know BJ is a great fighter, and we know Sean Sherk is a great fighter, but does BJ Penn have enough to go five rounds with a guy like Sean Sherk, who is just as fresh in round five as he is in round one? That's going to be the key here, and if he doesn't, he's in for a long night.
You know, the thing that I found so interesting about this bout, one of the interesting aspects is that Sean Sherk is getting a title shot right after a suspension. A lot of times you see guys having to build themselves up, you know, get that credibility back, but yet the UFC, I think they sort of made a deal with him. They said, okay, you know, they took it a long time to strip him of the title. He got the suspension reduced by the California State Athletic Commission, and in return, he's getting a shot right after the suspension. What do you think of that decision?
I think that's typical Dana White. I mean, the question here is, Dana more pro-Sherk, or is he more anti-Penn? And I think it's a little bit of both. We know that Dana and Sean are friends, and we know that Dana and BJ are not. Doesn't surprise me all to see Sherk right back in the mix. You know, they're playing the angle that Sherk never really lost his title in the cage, so he should get his title shot back right away. And BJ Penn wants to get this thing done, seal the deal, and move on to unfinished business with St. Pierre.
Perhaps it's because of all the stuff going down with Tito Ortiz and the feud between him and Dana White. You don't hear much about the problems between Penn and Dana. For those that don't know, can you kind of bring us up to speed of their history? Because you don't, again, don't hear a lot about it now.
Yeah, it's interesting how that's kind of gone by the wayside now that BJ has been back in the UFC. But the storyline that's going on with Tito and Dana was very similar to the storyline between Tito and BJ many years ago, when BJ was kind of in the UFC, a big star, making a name for himself, and then just kind of dropped off the face of the earth. There wasn't a whole lot of love going on between Dana and BJ, and they've kind of patched things up now to keep a business relationship going, because Dana recognizes the talent that BJ is, and BJ recognizes that if he's going to be who he is and try and be the best in the world, he needs to be in the UFC. I don't see the same thing happening between Dana and Tito, but BJ's back, and you know, he would love nothing more than to put Sherk away and claim the throne at lightweight.
I spoke to BJ Penn recently and asked him about the rumors that he was considering moving up to welterweight at some point. If he does win this bout, and he was sort of elusive and said that, you know, he wants to focus on this bout only and then sort of think about the whole welterweight division. But if he does win, do you think that he will move up now or stick around for a bit, you know, defend the title a little more, and then eventually move up?
I don't think he's going to wait at all. This is something that that victory by St. Pierre has consumed him ever since it happened. And I think he is on a mission to first finish business here at lightweight. He wants to beat Sherk, and then he is going to focus 100% on returning to welterweight to fight George St. Pierre. I heard it from Joe Lozon, and I think it's pretty obvious at this point that's what BJ Penn feels like he needs to do to complete his legacy.
All right, so then the big question is BJ Penn going to be winning this Saturday night?
Well, I think he is, and I think the biggest thing we have to look at here when we're talking about Penn versus Sherk, we have to look at their performance against like competition. Both of them have losses at welterweight to both Matt Hughes and George St. Pierre, but the difference is in the performance. Look at the performance of Sean Sherk and BJ Penn in rounds one against Hughes and St. Pierre. Sherk was stifled against Hughes. He was absolutely destroyed by GSP, But on the other side of the coin, Matt Hughes and George St. Pierre were absolutely handled by BJ Penn in round one of their fight. Matt Hughes barely survived. George St. Pierre looked like a homicide victim. He went on eventually to lose those fights, but I blame that on his cardio, and that's why that's so important in this fight. He has a better skill set than Sean Sherk, but does he have the cardio to last? If he can't finish it in rounds one and two, it's not going to go his way.
What do you make of all the trash talking that's gone on specifically from BJ? Is that obviously he's sort of trying to touch on a nerve here by, you know, repeatedly calling into question whether or not Sean Sherk is telling the truth about all the steroid stuff and his repeated admissions that he was in fact telling the truth, that he did not take any steroids. But BJ keeps going and going and going, much like we saw him do on the Ultimate Fighter 5 show with Jens Pulver. Does that stuff bug you at all, or in a weird way, does it make you sort of like BJ Penn more?
I think that's typical Penn. It doesn't really bother me. I wouldn't say that I like it. I wouldn't say that I dislike it. You know, that's the mental game by BJ. He's getting into Sherk's head, and you know, Sherk is angry, and if Sherk is smart, he's going to go into this fight without the emotions. I think that's what BJ is shooting for here. He wants Sherk to come to the cage emotional. He wants Sherk to come in and make a mistake. See, Sherk's biggest strength is to be on top, to be wrestling, to be on the top position. But that's not a place you want to be with BJ. And BJ's looking for Sherk to make those mistakes. And if he comes in emotional, if he comes in bothered, and let's face it, BJ's doing this not only to push the buttons of Sean Sherk, he also wants to push the buttons of Dana White. And I think he's doing that on both accounts. So, you know, if BJ has his way, Sherk is going to come in, he's going to be angry, he's going to be emotional. He's going to make a mistake, and he could get submitted.
You actually do think that there's still some underlying beef between White and Penn?
Oh, definitely. I think that, you know, BJ's the kind of guy, his attitude, his approach to the fight game, I think he still rubs Dana the wrong way. They work together because they make each other money, but I don't think that they're buddy-buddy.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, like I said at the top, this card is definitely stacked. Plenty of main event potential cards filtered throughout the at least the televised portion of it all. And regardless of what the UFC wants us to think, you cannot make any argument that Tito Ortiz versus Leonardo Machida is the second most intriguing bout on this card, simply because of, you know, is Machida for real? Can he take down Ortiz? And will Ortiz sort of run out of the UFC with his tail behind the legs? Or conversely, does Ortiz sort of throw a wrench into the UFC's plans of building up Lyoto Machida? And then will he actually get a chance to talk on the microphone following a potential victory? First off, what do you think about this whole Ortiz-Dana White feud, seemingly very a la pro wrestling, where it keeps building up to that pay-per-view match to get us interested in it and then sort of goes away afterwards? Do you believe that this will, in fact, win or lose, be his final fight in the octagon?
I think it will be his final fight. And I don't know about you or anybody else, but I am ready for this storyline to be over. Not since Ortiz-Shamrock have I been so sick of a storyline. This is going back all the way to the boxing match they were supposed to have, to the bad blood special on Spike. I don't want to hear anything else about Ortiz and Dana White. So hopefully after the fight on Saturday, this is going to be put to bed. But the big question is, who comes out a winner? Is it Dana? If Ortiz loses, then Dana's the winner. Dana goes out on top. He goes, hey, we don't need you anyway. You can't win a fight. If Ortiz wins and he wins convincingly, he can go out, you know, riding the white horse onto another promotion. You know, leaving the UFC behind, embarrassed because now they don't have Machida.
Do you actually think that if he wins, if Ortiz wins, will the UFC try to make a bid to keep him around, or is it really pretty much moot point at this point? It's all over between the two.
Yeah, I think it's over and done with. Even if Ortiz wins, I don't think that it's worth the headaches for Dana White to keep a relationship with Tito. It's nothing but bad press back and forth all the time. I think he's ready to say goodbye.
You know, it's interesting because, like you said, people are starting to get sick of it, sick of the storyline, sick of hearing about Dana White's problems with Ortiz. For me, though, I agree with you, but I am interested in seeing whether or not he will talk on the microphone after and if he says anything. Does any of that sort of pique your interest?
It does. I guess there's that cynical part of me that wonders how much of what he says will be genuine, whether it's positive or it's negative. If he's going to go out and, you know, one thing I'll give Tito credit, he always gives, you know, props to the fans. You know, I don't know how much of what he says will be genuine. It all depends, I guess, whether or not he wins or loses.
Right, all right. And then on the flip side of things, you got Lyoto Machida there, a guy who is undefeated right now in the light heavyweight division and rising up the rankings, so to speak, with each and every win, coming off a very impressive victory over Sokoju at UFC 79 in December. And now here he is fighting this MMA legend, Tito Ortiz. Will we find out on Saturday night that Lyoto Machida is in fact for real?
I definitely think so. Machida is for real. The biggest knock against Machida has been his inability to finish fights. People don't like decisions, especially in a sport that's, you know, basically two guys beating the crap out of each other. Nobody likes a decision, especially Machida's been on, you know, some questionable decisions as far as entertainment value. Has he done enough offense? Is there just too much dancing? But here's a guy, you know, you look at his record, he's undefeated, he's beat some tough guys, and he just broke out of his decision funk with a ridiculous arm triangle against Sokoju. He's a very difficult guy to prepare for. I mean, the big thing is Tito going to be able to get in on this guy and get him down? If Tito can't get him to the ground, Tito's going to drop the decision here.
All right, so you're picking Machida.
I am picking Machida.
All right, interesting. And then the other big thing for me is, you know, if Machida, in fact, does win, does he get dibs on the winner of Rampage versus Griffin? I mean, does that really slot him up as, you know, in the UFC's rankings, the third or fourth, maybe even second best light heavyweight in their division?
I think it depends on how he wins. I mean, if he draws this out to a decision, if the fans are booing in the third round, you know, I can't say that definitely he'll be up there ready for the title shot. You know, you also have to look at another light heavyweight match on that card in Jardine Silva. If Jardine comes out of that looking like, you know, the next big thing, then, you know, there's some questions to ask. You also have another guy, Thiago Silva. You know, there's a lot of question marks in this division that I think will be answered after Saturday night.
All right, well, very nice segue into our next bout. Keith Jardine going up against Vanderlei Silva. Such an intriguing bout on so many levels. You know, Vanderlei is stuck in this losing streak, and for UFC fans, maybe, you know, it doesn't look so bad for those that, you know, never follow Pride, but so he's, I guess, in their minds, 0-1, but, you know, they forget about the losses at the end of the Pride, you know, the Pride run over in Japan, and then, you know, Keith Jardine, you know, coming off, it seems so long ago, but he did, in fact, defeat Chuck Liddell in September, UFC 76. And prior to that, though, you know, losing a battle to a very quick knockout to Houston Alexander. But then before that, you know, he has a victory over Forrest Griffin. Okay, so which Keith Jardine is, in fact, going to show up against Vanderlei Silva?
I think the real Keith Jardine is going to show up against Vanderlei Silva. Keith Jardine is a guy who's much like Forrest Griffin, and that people were and probably still are reluctant to recognize him as a top contender, which he is. Like you mentioned before, Jardine has a win over Chuck Liddell. I mean, how many guys in the sport today can say that? Not a whole lot. He knows how to punish guys. He's got devastating leg kicks. Obviously, he has power. And the thing about Jardine, especially at light heavyweight, he's a big guy. I met him at Strikeforce last month, and this guy is huge for a light heavyweight, just like Forrest is. And when I talked to Rampage, Rampage said, you don't understand, when you get into the cage with a guy that are this big, it's very difficult to finish. And I think Jardine is going to go in there. He's going to use his size. And if he stays out of Silva's game, which is hard to do, he could very well take it.
Do you think this fight is going to last more than a round?
I definitely think so. You know, Jardine's a tough guy. Silva's a tough guy. I think they're going to battle it out for at least two.
All right, and then on the flip side, Vanderlei Silva, like I said, in fact, he's on a three-fight losing streak. He's had losses prior to coming to the UFC in that bout against Chuck Liddell, a loss to Dan Henderson, obviously much-hyped fight against Hendo, and then obviously the loss to Mirko Krokop prior to the Henderson bout. And this could be four losses in a row for the Axe Murderer, a guy that at one time was arguably one of the most feared men in the world of mixed martial arts. Is there a chance that if he loses, he will get dropped by the UFC? I know it's a stretch, but they're, you know, making a lot of cuts these days. Do you think that that's a possibility?
I think it depends how he loses. Here's a guy, the only thing in my eyes that's saving Vanderlei Silva is, yes, he has three straight losses. Two of them have been devastating knockouts, but they've been to A-level competition. It's very hard to knock a guy who goes out there and gives everything he has and loses to another A-level competitor. But he needs to win, and he needs to win convincingly against Keith Jardine. He needs to bring the pain. He needs to remind everybody why he was so feared at one time in this division. If we see the Silva that went in there and put Rampage in the hospital, the guy with the scariest knees and the most devastating clinch I've ever seen, that's the Vanderlei Silva that needs to come in here. And if we see that, don't be surprised to see him up there challenging for a title shot.
A win or lose, we've heard rumors that Silva is considering moving down to middleweight at some point. Do you expect that to happen again, win or lose, following this bout?
I would expect that from a loss, not from a win.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so it really all depends on what happens on Saturday night.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we'll look out for that. And like you said earlier, you're expecting Jardine to win. So we might see Silva back in the or going down to the middleweight division for the UFC sooner rather than later. You also mentioned Thiago Silva, who's another up-and-coming star in the UFC light heavyweight division, undefeated, 11-0. And the last time we saw him was at UFC 78 with a very impressive victory over Houston Alexander. That's when we first realized that, hey, maybe Houston Alexander is not for real after all. Totally dominated him on the ground. He's going up against a guy by the name of Antonio Mendez, who is making his UFC debut. Silva, though, 11-0, like I said, is he for real? I mean, we saw what he did against Houston Alexander. Of course, he's undefeated, but now stepping up in competition against a more game and a veteran opponent. What are you expecting from Silva on Saturday?
I love Thiago Silva. This is a guy that you have to watch in this division. He is exciting to watch. Like you said, he exposed Houston Alexander. 10 of his wins are by KO or TKO. That's a scary percentage. I mean, this guy goes in there, and you would think that a guy that's this good at jiu-jitsu to have 10 knockouts, I mean, this guy just can't seem to do anything wrong. He's going to go in there. He's going to steamroll Mendez. Mendez is a good fighter. He has a good record. He doesn't have anything notable as far as competition is concerned. He's over there fighting in Poland and Portugal. The guy's all over the map. I mean, he's certainly earning his money. He's a fellow Brazilian. He's going to come in there with a Thai box style, and that's going to work right into Thiago's game. He's going out.
Yeah, so you sort of answered my question there, because not a lot known about Mendez, and you look at his record, not a lot of familiar names there, but again, like you said, a pretty impressive record with a 14-2 mark, and now he's making his UFC debut. But you fully expect that Thiago Silva will be, reigning supreme again. Do you think that Thiago, then, 11-0, and then you got another guy in Machida who's getting all the pub, 12-0. Why isn't Thiago getting as much sort of notoriety right now as Machida?
Well, I think the thing about Thiago is here's a guy who needs to learn how to sell himself. Here's a guy, if you can imagine, if Thiago Silva had Ortiz's mouth, where he would be right now in the UFC. Here's a guy who's got to go in there. He's got to continue doing what he's doing. He's got to hype himself up, and he's got to keep knocking people out, and that'll speak for itself.
It's interesting that both of them are on the same card, because they're very much in the same boat in terms of not being able to sort of grasp the art of selling yourself. In a year from now, who do you think is going to be further along in their career, Thiago Silva or Lyoto Machida?
I think Thiago Silva.
Really? Wow. So you're a big Thiago Silva fan.
Well, when you can stop fights like this guy can, I mean, if Machida had the kind of, you look at their records, very, very similar. But look at how the fights end in Machida and how the fights end in Silva. I mean, like I said, you've got 10 knockouts, and Machida has how many decisions? I think that's the difference right there for me.
All right. And for me, the other very intriguing bout on this card is obviously Sokoju, only because, I mean, this is a guy that we've had, we've only seen fight 6 times. He has a 4-2 record now coming off of the loss to Machida. But there was so much hype around him, and there was so much excitement around him, the way he burst onto the scene in Pride last year. And now, he's not even fighting on the televised portion of the card against Nakamura. Are you surprised by that?
I am surprised that he's not fighting on the televised portion. Perhaps punishment for the way he performed against Machida. I mean, you think about what Sokoju and the UFC went through, back and forth. And Sokoju kind of toyed with the UFC for a little while. Kind of said some things about going there and not going there. And then Sokoju thought he had a contract locked up with K1 and some other organizations. So when he finally did enter the UFC, it was a long time coming. And he had, like you said, very high expectations. And he went in there and he got tooled. I think, it was a setback. Maybe he took some things for granted and a little too big for his britches. But he's definitely the real deal. He has great hands, excellent judo, and now he has something to prove. And I think he's going to go out there and do it against Nakamura.
Yeah, so you're fully expecting him to come out on top. Nakamura, his second UFC fight, lost to Machida, so, went a full 3 rounds with him. But nevertheless, you're still expecting a Sokoju victory?
Oh, Nakamura's been around the block. I'll give him that. But he doesn't have any wins against A-level competition. He's been handled by guys like Little Na, Hendo, Vanderlei, even Machida. I mean, he doesn't have anything that gives me any indication that he's going to be able to overcome Sokoju.
All right, you look at the rest of the card. Any specific bout out there that you want to touch on?
I think it's interesting that we see Kopenhaver back in the UFC. I didn't think he'd be back after his run-in with the law back in December. But I guess that insane fight with Jared Rollins at the Ultimate Finale 6 is probably why. He's going to have his hands full, though. You mark my words, Yoshida. Zenko Yoshida is one to watch. He's on an 8-fight winning streak, 6 of those 8 by KO or TKO. I'm a huge Zenko fan. I think he's going to break out here.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned Copenhaver. There was a lot of talk as to whether or not he will be dropped, and of course, he isn't dropped. One of those guys that I think when we watched the show for the first time, you know, the Ultimate Fighter show that he appeared on, we never really thought that this is a guy that would be sticking around, sort of fit in that mold of, you know, more of a personality than a fighter. But here he is after that great bout against Jared Rollins, which he won in December against Yoshida, as you mentioned. Why do you love Yoshida so much? Why are you so high on him?
I just think the way that he fights, his style, is very exciting to watch. I mean, I think that ties into why we're seeing Copenhaver again. You look at why he's back. He had a great fight against Jared Rollins, and that's the kind of thing that fans like to see, and that's the kind of thing that excites guys like Dana White. You will always be employed if you put on fights like that, and I think that's why Copenhaver's back, and I think that's why we're going to see a lot of Zenko Yoshida. He knows how to fight, and he knows how to put on a good fight. He knows how to stop people. This is a guy that I like to watch, and I think that's why he'll be back.
A very good point to end on, especially in this day and age, in this UFC climate. It's almost not as important whether you win or lose. Just go out there and put on a slugfest, and you'll probably have a job in a couple of months. Jesse, great stuff as always. Again, MMAmania.com. Jesse Holland, waxing poetic for us on UFC 84 and what to look out for. As always a pleasure.
Pleasure is mine.